Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 557, Altogether Too Much Monkey Business, being recorded on June 11th of the year 2006. It's my pleasure to bring back to our airwaves someone with whom we haven't visited in quite some time, an individual who not only is a brilliant author, but in my opinion, a genuine American hero. That gentleman is Ed Haslam, the author of Mary Ferry and the Monkey Virus, the story of an underground medical laboratory, soon, my understanding is, to be republished. Ed, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Thank you, Dave.
We have been, over a period of years, talking about some medical/political situations, which, rather like the course of evolution itself, have moved from simians to humans. And in this case, we're going to be following up a line of discussion that we have touched on in, among other programs, For the Record program number 269, done all the way back in the year 2000. We're going to be talking about the appearance of the AIDS virus and some apparent disinformation. The, quote, 25th anniversary of the appearance of AIDS has occupied a fair amount of media attention recently. And there has also been a media report pretending, and I think that's an accurate word, to have traced the origins of AIDS. Is it back to the 1930s, or is it to a chimpanzee? Or, well, Ed, why don't you pick up the narrative there? What about the latest hypothesis of AIDS, SIV, chimpanzees, monkeys, etc.?
Okay, we're talking about AIDS, and we're talking about the fact that AIDS is caused by a mutated monkey virus, which has been known for decades. And the only thing I would differ with you on in your introduction, this is not a media report. This is a global media campaign.
Right.
Which is being reported all over the globe, very nicely orchestrated. And it says, and I'm reading now from a headline from the New York Times from May 26th, chimp virus is linked to HIV. And another headline I'm reading here says, chimp poop, and by poop they're referring to feces, reveals AIDS origins, researchers say. Okay, and that's a Reuters release. Both of these things are links on my website, so if your listeners want to go to that, and we'll talk about the website later, but the raw material is available to the listeners. What's going on here is a new wave in what I'll call the propaganda war on AIDS to distance it from the medical research community and blame it on the chimpanzees and Mother Nature. And the dangers of monkey, and I'm going to use monkey and chimpanzee sort of interchangeably at the moment. Technically, they're called simians. But the dangers of using monkeys in medical research has been known for a long, long time. In fact, in the second chapter of my book, I quote a man named Richard Fiennes, who was a monkey researcher back in the 1960s. And he said, quote, plainly, it is in the realms of virology that primate zoonosis, which means diseases jumping from monkeys to man, presents the greatest dangers. And further, he says that the further danger is that simian viruses might become adapted to human populations and spread with appalling rapidity and under circumstances in which there were no possible immediate means of control. Now that, in my opinion, is a direct prediction of the AIDS epidemic.
Let me jump in ever so quickly, Ed. One thing that is a major focal point of your book, which we've discussed at great length, is the contamination of the polio vaccine with a cancer-causing monkey virus, the SV40, which appears to be linked to what you have correctly identified as a soft tissue cancer epidemic. So the notion of diseases going from monkeys from primates to humans is something that is a major focal point of your work. But we're going to be talking about a somewhat different infection now, not the SV40 cancer epidemic, but AIDS is the focal point now. Continue, Ed.
Right. And in the propaganda technique called confusion and misrepresentation, one of the things that has happened is that they have tried to take the idea that someone said that AIDS was distributed in the polio vaccine, which A, I never said, and B, did not happen, and I never would argue that it happened. I argued against people who said it happened. And then they held that up in front of the spotlight and said, see, the scientists disproved it. So all these conspiracy theories are wrong, okay? And all they did was misrepresent the issue. My position on this is very close to the mainstream position, which says something weird happened to the simian immunodeficiency virus, known as SIV, that turned it into the AIDS virus, which is HIV-1, okay? And the way I put this on a bumper sticker or a T-shirt is SIV plus radiation equals HIV, okay? Something weird happened to AIDS, and when you know, I mean, to the monkey virus to turn it into the AIDS virus, and when you realize that they were using radiation on these things during the time period which is suspect, which the best mainstream people identify as 1960, then you start to see how the pieces of the puzzle fit together. You also start to understand why they keep trying to get this thing before 1960, because that gets them off the hook. And there's been a number of efforts on that, some of which I'll be talking about today, pointing to 1959.
Ed, let me jump in once again very quickly, because we may have some listeners who are not familiar with previous lines of discussion. In numerous broadcasts, including FTR 16, which is available online, we have talked about AIDS as a man-made disease. And just really super quickly, I want to interject a quote from the House Select, or not the House Select Committee on Assassination, that's our previous focal point on the Kennedy assassination, but the House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing for the budget, for the defense budget for fiscal year 1969 to 1970, a Dr. MacArthur, quoted here in the book A Higher Form of Killing by Robert Harris and Jeremy Paxman, said as follows. This is a direct quote. Within the next 5 to 10 years, it would probably be possible to make a new, infective microorganism which could differ in certain respects from any known disease-causing organisms. Most important of these is that it might be refractory, i.e. breaking down and resistant to, the immunological and therapeutic processes upon which we depend to maintain our relative freedom from infectious disease. The authors then go on to comment, the possibility that such a super germ may have been successfully produced in a laboratory somewhere in the world in the years since that assessment was made is one which should not be too readily cast aside. I interject that, Ed, in order to provide a little bit of background, because as we're talking about what you believe and what I believe is a deliberate disinformation campaign to pin the origin of AIDS back at a time that would basically free up the as yet unnamed or unidentified conspirators, because many of us believe there were, that sort of frames the path of inquiry that you are now engaging in. Okay,
right.
Ed, go ahead.
And if in 1970 you say we might be able to do this by 1975, you're implying we didn't do it in 1960.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like saying, that's the fox saying there's nobody in here but us chickens, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an outrageous thing. But these headlines are going around about this current story about the chimp virus that we need to focus on here, now that everyone's got some background, is being promoted by a Dr. Hahn from the University of Alabama in Birmingham, Alabama. Okay. We first heard from Dr. Hahn in 1997, when she announced, again, it was a very nicely orchestrated PR campaign that echoed around the world, that she had found in chimpanzee cells the HIV-1 virus, and that she had discovered the origin of AIDS. And that was in Time magazine and Newsweek and all these big official things. And she had all these DNA charts and everything else to prove it. But what she did, and they did say where she got this chimpanzee cell from, the chimpanzee's name was Marilyn, okay, female chimpanzee, who had died in 1985, okay? And for the director of that laboratory kept Maryland cells in a refrigerator in his office. And when he finally died, in the late 1990s, they cleaned out his office and they found these cells in his office. And the person who found the cell says, well, I have a friend who's looking into this AIDS thing and does DNA stuff. I'll send her these cells. So the cells were sent from the Colston Foundation Primate Research Laboratory in Alamogordo, New Mexico, to Dr. Hahn down in Alabama and said, analyze this. Okay, so she analyzes it and says, wow, there's AIDS in here. Okay. Now, what was not properly explained to Dr. Hahn at the time was that Dr. Colston was injecting HIV-tainted blood, which he got from the people in San Diego who announced the epidemic, and injecting them into female chimpanzees in his laboratory. His laboratory, by the way, was the laboratory for the United States Air Force at the White Sands Missile Range, and the laboratory for the for NASA, the space agency. Okay, so a U.S. government laboratory is doing experiments on AIDS, which is documented in an interview that Dr. Colston did with one of the newspapers in Albuquerque. And he said from the moment that he heard about the AIDS thing, he got a hold of the tainted bloods. So from the moment, pins it to 1981, he started injecting this stuff into his female laboratories. I mean, a female chimpanzee in his laboratory to see if it was transferred from mother to child. The other thing, as I was researching Colston, he says, look, we didn't keep our chimps in cages like they were locked up in solitary confinement. They lived in communal groups just like they do in the wild. Well, I'm not an anthropologist, but I used to live with one. And I learned just in that context that chimp communities, the alpha male has the right to mate with all the females in the community, which he does on a regular basis. So you get this idea that passing, whether or not Maryland was specifically infected, and the odds are good that she was, but if not, the transmission within that community, which was not a terribly well-run laboratory, according to the people that monitor this stuff, is a real issue, okay? So this is 1997, and I made these people aware of this problem back in 1997. However, they said, I mean, you know, the grant mill rolls on, and they said, well, we're going to go to Africa and see if we can find the same thing in chimps in the wild, okay? Now, at this point, I want to remind your listeners, some of whom may have been at this event, but you hosted a speech that I gave in California at a local college. And in that session, somebody from the audience, I remember he had a coat and tie on, he was sitting in the front row, he said, well, where does this conversation about the origin of AIDS go from here? And my answer was, well, you know, the problem is you got this monkey virus over here and you got the human AIDS thing over there and you got this big gap in the middle that nobody can explain, which makes it so suspicious that that was caused by something in the scientific research community. And this guy looked at me and I said, you know, if I was doing it, what I would do is I'd try to fill in the gap. If I was organizing the propaganda, I would find something that was a little closer between the human and the monkey in order to blame it on. And I would think that a chimpanzee would fill that very nicely. And guess what? Here we are, 2006, and they're blaming it on the chimpanzee. So the first thing they're asking us right now is to believe that between 1981 and 1997, that's a 16-year gap, every major research laboratory in the world, and I'm talking Harvard, Stanford, the Tumor Lab at NIH, the University of Chicago, the University of San Francisco, the Pasteur Institute, Oxford University, Tulane Medical School, Johns Hopkins, all these people missed the fact that HIV was really in chimpanzees because they all had them in their labs. So how did all those people miss something that was suddenly discovered in the University of Alabama in Birmingham?
From a sample of blood taken from a chimpanzee that died in 1985, that in turn was part of a chimpanzee population at a U.S. government, specifically military and NASA-run laboratory, in which not only were those chimps being deliberately injected with AIDS blood, but chimps that lived in a normal primate colony and therefore were having sexual relations in common with other chimpanzees, thereby being vectored. Go ahead, Ed.
Okay, so now we are on the 25th anniversary of the announcement of, and I won't even say discovery, I'll say announcement of AIDS. And they're now telling us that these same people from the University of Alabama in Birmingham have now found the AIDS virus in chimpanzees in the wild in Africa. But when you start reading the fine print, it's like the old saying in advertising, the big print giveth and the little print taketh away.
Yep, go ahead.
You start getting into, well, how did you find this stuff? Well, we were analyzing feces that we found on the forest floor. Oh, okay. And what were you doing with these feces? Well, we were running enzyme tests on it. Now, enzyme test means that they're not really finding the virus. They're just finding an enzyme which was developed as the immune system reacted to the virus, okay? And they say they found it on 35% of the chimpanzees. Well, if this thing, based on what I just said about the promiscuity of the alpha male and the collective living arrangements of the chimpanzees and all this stuff, if this thing had been in the chimpanzee population for a long time, it would have been more than 35%, okay? So that's a problem with the story. But what I really object to in the current press coverage is the current people writing about this are noticeably less informed, but they're noticeably more cooperative with the authorities than anything I've seen in the past, and particularly more so than, and this is all kind of lay media in comparison to the scientific media, and they're blurring the lines between SIV and HIV.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you blur the lines and you say, well, there's really not that much of a difference, you don't have to raise the question, what happened? Why are they so different? Which has always been the central question in this thing. In other words, they can take the word mutation out of the conversation, okay? And it's very clear to me from reading the literature on this, AIDS is caused by a mutated monkey virus. And they're trying to get the word mutated out of the conversation by confusion, okay? So how do they publish this, and how do they get it distributed? There's a technique in PR called a bank shot, where you find one kind of respected publication that will pick up the story, and then everybody else can quote them. Now, the publication in question here is Nature magazine, which is owned by Disney, I believe. And it is, in effect, a pop science magazine. It's not a real journal of professional scientists. It's something that sort of allows professional scientists to talk to the lay population that's interested in it. And in these articles, you find more detailed information, but a lot of really bizarre logic. For example, as they're analyzing the DNA on this stuff, they said, well, this stuff didn't make any sense because as you look at a DNA, they have something we refer to as clocks. And the clocks were the problem. And once we removed the clocks, the underlying patterns in the DNA started to make sense. That's like saying if we disregard all the evidence that doesn't explain our theory, then our theory is well explained.
Ed, we got about 10 minutes left in the first and in the half hour here. Can you briefly explain to us, including me, what these clocks are, or at least give us an analogy so that we can understand them? What are these exactly? Or what? It's a new term on me.
Well, it was a quote officially new term on me because it was one that I ran across in this Nature article as I looked at it. But
mm-hmm.
The concept is that there are patterns in DNA, and there's something really, really wrong with the HIV molecule. Okay, I mean fundamentally wrong. And the reason I can say this is everything that reproduces itself, which is everything around here that's alive, makes an imperfect copy of itself. Okay. Some make an almost perfect copy and some are a little looser and everything else, but the difference between one generation and the next generation is referred to as the officially scientific term, the intrinsic error frequency rate. And they're able to measure that. And they've measured on all these viruses and they keep all this in the database and stuff. And along comes AIDS and they start measuring the intrinsic error frequency rate on this thing, and it's outside the envelope. And therefore, you're sort of left with two options. You either say, I am going to redefine nature based on this one virus, or I've got to say that this virus is unnatural because it is not behaving the way that everything else we know behaves. Okay? And when the mainstream hard scientists like Harvard and all those people looked at this thing initially, they said the problem we have is there's too much difference between the simian side of it, the green monkey side of it, and the human side of it in order to be explained by natural evolution in the time frame involved. That's scientific code for saying somebody mutated it, because that's the only other explanation.
Now, what conclusion have these researchers or the people discussed in Nature magazine reached with regard to the clocks again?
Well, they just said that when they looked at the thing, the clocks didn't make sense to them. And when they removed those DNA markers, which they were referring to as clocks, that the underlying stuff made sense to them, and therefore the argument they're trying to make is because they did more research and got into the subject deeper, they're able to solve the mystery by seeing the underlying pattern. But to me, and this is just my opinion, I think the technique of disregarding the inconvenient evidence is professionally suspect.
It's actually the formal methodological opposite of accepted scientific method. I mean, if you're trying to test a hypothesis, and if some concrete data disprove that hypothesis, you don't then throw out the data in order to maintain the hypothesis intact.
Right. Well, and they keep bringing up some other stuff, too. I've always maintained the reason they keep bringing up 1959 is it's 1 year before 1960. And 1960 is when the respected mainstream people said this thing started. I mean, that's due to a mathematical regression back there, and that puts it at a very awkward period of time in relationship to certain research projects that were going on. So if they can blame it on the year before those projects started, then they can say, well, you know, didn't happen here. And there are two 1959 projects I wrote about in my book, and they're pretty easily dismissed. One of them was so thoroughly dismissed by real professionals like Los Alamos Laboratory and stuff that they didn't even bother to bring them up again. But there's this other one from Central Africa that was originally brought up in 1986. And they said that this is proof that AIDS started in Central Africa and this guy had it. Well, I read the article and read it carefully. And there was no reference to the guy's name because they didn't get it. There's no reference to who took the sample. There's no reference to where the sample was stored in the last 27 years and those type of issues. And all they did was a clinical serology test on it, not a DNA analysis. And from that test, they concluded this guy had AIDS. But the very same article apologizes because there's a lot of false positives on old blood and stuff. Now, 9 years after this happens, Gerald Myers was the head of the Los Alamos HIV database, said, just to clear the air, that the oldest AIDS case he knew of, and he had access to all the data, was an HIV case from 1976.
which would put it right about in the time frame predicted in that House Appropriations Subcommittee hearing quote that we just accessed a short time ago.
Oh, I promise you, it was done before that guy ever opened his mouth.
Right.
But the point is, they're regurgitating old studies that the people who are writing about this stuff are, you know, I mean, can't even find on the internet. You know, and I've read them, and I know how weak they are, and the fact that they're using them to make these outrageous claims that they're making, and the press is just picking it up is why I'm on the radio. I think your listeners need a more thoughtful analysis about all this. And the next thing they get into, oh, on this 1959 thing, before I leave it, the other 1959 case was a case of a merchant marine seaman who stopped at a brothel in West Africa and picked up a disease that killed him. Now, what he picked up actually was HIV-2, which is the real simian immunity virus in the human, okay? And they sent the samples from this guy to the University of Alabama, Birmingham, same place, or to Dr. Ho, who wasn't there then, but he's there now, okay? And upon further analysis by Los Alamos and Oxford, they said, oh, by the way, there's two sets of DNA in here. This sample is contaminated, and therefore, we're throwing it out, okay? And Dr. Ho says, you know, well, it was contaminated. It wasn't contaminated in my lab. It must have been contaminated before it got to me. And that's very similar to the Maryland scenario, okay? These people are saying, oh, you do DNA analysis, analyze this. And they analyze it, and they find stuff in there, and they call a press conference, and they make all these conclusions, and they don't know who did what with it before it got there. And that is a real serious problem, a credibility problem, in my opinion, with all this.
So, Ed, we are all out of time here in this half hour. So would you like to make some concluding remarks and above all, give the listening audience your website, because you know I have a website.
Yes. My website is themonkeyvirus.com. That's T-H-E, monkeyvirus.com. And there's a links page on there, and it's got all kind of links to all this stuff. And the other thing that I wanted to say, and I'll say it very quickly, is they keep talking about finding this stuff in the wild. And if you don't know that they've been re-releasing chimpanzees from research laboratories back into the jungles for the last 20 years, that might be a believable argument, but it's all over. I mean, even the cable TV channels out there now, and you yourself have read things on the air about it and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the wild? I mean, there is no the wild anymore. In fact, one of the reasons they set up the primate centers in the United States, they used to have them in Africa, and the animals kept escaping back to the jungles. So the whole thing is so cross-contaminated that it's really only a fairy tale to say HIV came from the jungle. It didn't, and that's why it's not making sense. If it was natural, it would be behaving naturally.
Your website once again, Ed?
T-H-E,
mm-hmm.
themonkeyvirus.com.
Okay. And in the description for this program on www.spitfirelist.com, I will not only have links to other programs and material dealing with AIDS as a possibly a man-made virus, but also some other features, some other points of information supplemental to the line of inquiry we're engaging in now. This concludes For the Record program number 557. Altogether, Too Much Monkey Business, a visit with Ed Haslam, being recorded on June 11th of 2006. For Ed Haslam, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.